I have with me Professor Doug Kellner, who is a distinguished professor at UCLA.
Well, it's actually a philosophy of education in the spirit of John Dewey of how to analyze, critique, and reconstruct education for the contemporary moment. And my particular focus is on technology and media literacy, using technology to reconstruct education and teaching media and a variety of techno literacies, including reading the text of the news as well as entertainment to understand the contemporary world.
That's great. I mean, your writings have been extensive. Do you just talk about some of the recent ones that you've been working on in the last few years?
Well, during the 2000s, after the stolen election of 2000, I wrote a trilogy of books on media and politics, starting with Grand Theft 2000, that I consider to be the greatest crime in American history, that we actually had a stolen election. And I followed that up with a book called From 9/11 to Terror War that dealt with the 9/11 attacks and how the Bush Cheney administration exploited this to go to war first in Afghanistan and Iraq, and then Media Spectacle and the Crisis of Democracy synthesized my critique of the media and its role in enabling conservative politics. I must say that the 2008 election was a different story with the election of Barack Obama. And I just published an article in the International Journal of Communication on Barack Obama and Celebrity Spectacle that talks about how Obama mastered the technique of public speaking and using the media from television through the internet to promote his candidacy.
I mean, fascinating and very on point topics for today's discussion, because what I want to try to get to in this brief time we have, and really appreciate your time here, is to talk about the way in which kids, particularly growing up today, have a enormous task to kind of sort out all the images that are bombarding them from the media. And not just that, we're used to a world, in fact, the one we probably both grew up in, of a limited, one or two, three channel world. At least my world in the UK was a two channel world for a long time. We had the BBC and the ITV. Here you had like three major networks, right? And ABC and CBS and NBC, where the kind of ways that the media filtered things and channeled things. And today we've got this plethora of news sources, and of course with the internet, global sources of information. How do we in this country and elsewhere kind of accommodate this new or deal with this new reality?
Well, first of all, this is the biggest contradiction that we face. On one hand, we have more information sources than any society has ever had in history. And on the other hand, we have terrible corporate news media. We have three major networks that have 20-some minutes of news a night, mainly focusing on sensationalism or the story of the moment. And of course, we have the right-wing cable news network, Fox News, and CNN and MSNBC. So we really have sort of a paucity of good information and news and political discussion from the mainstream media, but we have tons of other media sources ranging from the outstanding to the horrific. And the challenge today is to teach our students how to gain information, how to critically appraise the news and the mass media. we have the contradiction between the most news sources we've ever had and mainstream news sources being fairly woeful. And we need to teach the students how to gain accurate and informed information.
Right. So, I mean, where do we stand? I mean, media studies seems to be a sort of fairly new and, you know, edgy kind of topic. It's not taught widely, at least in high school. Where are we, you know, in your view, in terms of moving that particular subject area to the forefront? Or is that, you know, is it just possible to kind of funnel all the kind of skills that students need in terms of one, you know, curriculum that perhaps they're exposed to, you know, when they're juniors or seniors in high school? Is it, or can we do a better job of trying to make sure that all students at nearly every level are exposed to this type
of... Absolutely. That's my position, that we need to start teaching media literacy from the very beginning. As soon as students enter the schools, they should be able to learn what news is, what advertising is, what kinds of entertainment. And by the way, one of my students here at UCLA, Jeff Scher, wrote a doctoral dissertation, now a book, on teaching media literacy to grade school students. Another of my colleagues, Ernest Morrell, at UCLA, taught or wrote a book about teaching students. He taught high school students in Oakland in an African-American community how to study English literature and poetry using rap music, comparing, for instance, rap and Shakespeare. So we have the beginnings of a media literacy curriculum and movement in the United States. But quite frankly, we're really underdeveloped and backward in comparison to, say, the UK, Canada, and Australia that have much more extensive and developed media literacy programs than we have here in the US. So we're just at the beginning of recognizing that media literacy, and now in the internet era, a variety of information and techno literacies are a necessary part of schooling. So we're really very far behind in the U.S. and have a long way to go to catch up.
And, you know, is part of the problem, or the part of the challenge, to try to empower students to actually be in control of their own production, as it were, of communication? So I'm thinking about training around video and audio and even things like podcasts. What do you think about that?
Well, this is exactly what Jeff Scher did in grade schools, teaching in L.A., teaching kids how to take a photograph, how to write a cartoon and do primitive animation, how to do newscasts, how to do advertising, how to do a soap opera. So this is one way of teaching media literacy through production. However, as it turns out, in the last 2 or 3 years, the students have generally surpassed their teachers in terms of techno literacies. I'm thinking of the students producing their own Facebook pages, mm-hmm. producing YouTubes, Twittering, using a variety of new media and social networking. The problem is they're often using it for entertainment or self-aggrandizement rather than, say, education and pedagogical or political purposes. Although some of the Youth for Obama used precisely these new media and social networking for a political cause. So it can be done, that the new media social networking can be used for both education and social change.
What would be your advice if you were a, you know, this isolated teacher who wanted to do some things to help their students understand the world better? And one of the things that I tried to advocate in my book was the way in which you could have students link directly, talk directly to each other, to get over, get through the media filters that, cause people, the students particularly, to or media to stereotype others and to kind of make it very difficult for them to really understand what students in other countries are like. So one way to get through that is to have direct communication. Is that something that you would, think is a good idea, or?
Absolutely. I've been writing on technopolitics of using blogs, wiki, twittering, social networking to connect people in different social movements, to connect people globally around certain issues. But let me give you a very specific example of how this could be done in a classroom. And let's take the issue of the Gulf oil spill. Now, I'm teaching a graduate and undergraduate seminar on technology here at UCLA. And in taking up this issue, we're basically able to get insights into the roles of corporation, the connections between corporations and the state, as well as the media in this very concrete issue of the Gulf oil spill. And I think that this can be addressed in any class, K through 12, as well as university seminars, where you just begin with the TV images of what happened. And you start off with ecology. You talk about the ecology of the Gulf, the fragility of the wetlands, the fishing lands, the fact that 40% of the fish consumed in the U.S. comes out of the Gulf. Then you talk about why are there these oil rigs there that are so poorly regulated that once you have a disastrous explosion and oil spill, the corporations don't seem to have any solutions. They don't seem to have any backups, any safety devices, any plan to deal effectively with these catastrophes. And this can open whole areas of ecology where they can go to the internet and do all kinds of ecological studies. They can do studies into the oil industry. They can study Louisiana and national politics of why or how the oil corporations control local politics and even senators and the Senate and House in the U.S. Congress. You can talk about neoliberalism and the deregulation that took place since the 1980s, the need for regulation. So, taking this one issue, you can send kids on all levels into any number of directions where they use resources on the internet. And probably there's very good discussion groups on this issue where young people of different ages can discuss with their peers, what's going on with this Gulf oil spill, what can be done to fix it and clean it up, what can be done to prevent it in the future. So the potential for the internet is tremendous. It's just a question of teachers having the imagination and, frankly, the space and the will to do this kind of teaching.
It's very challenging. I was thinking as you were talking about the Gulf oil thing, the way in which the media is playing up, not playing up enough the damage to that economy down in Louisiana and all
Or the
the.
responsibility of how this happened because of deregulation. Although after about a week or 10 days of just basically dealing with the mechanics of the spill and what BP was trying to do to fix it, suddenly BP started getting blamed and became a bad word. So there was a beginning of blame, but no one's really explained, how this could happen and what the responsibility of an oil corporation is. Our addiction to oil, that we don't ask these questions. So I think there's really a lot of questions you know, that can be raised, and a lot of
Right.
teaching that can be done
There's enormous,
about
yeah.
this or the West Virginia mine
Yes.
disaster. I just showed my class a couple documentaries on Food, Food Inc., The World According to Monsanto, which, by the way, is another way that media can be used for education. There's tremendous documentaries on any topic you can possibly imagine that could be used in a class that really gets the students going, more so than books, which unfortunately, you know, they're losing capacity for reading sustained textbooks.
Yeah, that is a problem. And but you know, it's engaging students in authentic, you know, real world stuff, and it's not treating them. See, I think so, there's a tendency in school to kind of and students then program themselves accordingly to have school as a separate reality from the world. And it's like as soon as you walk in through the school zone, you know, the irrelevant you know, word comes into play.
Right.
And it takes a tough teacher, you know, to you know, almost you know, do something different from the cultural norm. It's now become a cultural norm that, you know, and so it is a struggle, but it's worthwhile. I would think that you could really get a student you know, really focused in a really good way on some of these questions. That and you know, the media literacy thing sort of flows from it, because then you say,
Exactly.
okay, how much of this coverage, you know, how much of the coverage actually deals with the issues you're talking about? And do we have any kind of how much discussion is there here?
Well,
And
this is exactly right, that doing this kind of research makes the students into media critics, where they see the limitations of a Fox News or an ABC News, and they see where you can get good information on issues like this oil spill. For instance, the New York Times has had a couple excellent articles. The LA Times has had a couple good articles. There's blogs that are covering this issue. So you can find good information on this, but you know, you have to look hard to separate out the information that mainly on this issue just focuses on all the great things that, you know, BP is trying to do to fix it up. Although the longer they fail and the worse the spill goes, they really have a crisis, you
Oh,
know,
yeah.
in public relations. And this is a way that media spectacle can work, not just to mesmerize people into following, you know, what the government says and does, but to get them to raise questions
Right.
about what's really going on.
Yeah, because I think that the consequence is that if people are, you know, as they have become kind of deadened to this, that they, you know, for example, the Wall Street, you know, issue. You know, there's a narrative that the media has, you know, kept up about the Wall Street thing, which got punctured a few times, which is that this was just an unbelievably unpredictable, could not be predicted catastrophe, you know, and no one could have seen it coming. Versus, you know, various people who've said, no, I think if you actually looked at the numbers, you could see it coming pretty clearly, you know.
Right. Actually, the Bill Moyers show, which unfortunately just went off the air, he retired last week. In the past 2 months, he's had about four or so shows on the Wall Street crisis that were just incredible.
Really?
Got
Okay.
where he had experts that took these very complex financial issues and explained them in a way that at least I would say high school students, you know, would have, and certainly college students would be able to understand what the issues were, and thus the limitations of the corporate media that didn't begin to explain this, nor did, for that matter, the politicians.
How
You know, they
about,
still haven't addressed it.
right, and now what we've got are segmented camps. I mean, one of the worrying things is you have the Fox News, as you've said, and then you have, say, MSNBC, which has its own sort of view, which is contrary to Fox many times, but not always. And then students think, well, you know, reality is basically whatever you make it, you know, and so Fox has made their own reality,
Right.
and
But
you
see,
know.
you need to make them critical. of showing how the media constructs very different views of reality. And it's very instructive to contrast, say, a Keith Olbermann show with a Bill O'Reilly
Yes.
show on a similar topic, where you're getting completely different views. Then you got CNN in the middle, and you can argue that they're not really addressing the issues, you know, from one side or the other, or, you know, the multiplicities of sides that usually revolve around a given issue. So I think if you take specific cases and show how different media present this, you really get a sense that media construct a view
Yes.
of reality,
Right.
but you also get a sense that they have very specific biases, and you get a sense that there's some very good information out there and there's very poor information out there. And it takes a long time to sort this out. But the kids are really fascinated
I think so.
By studying the media because they are part of the media. They've
And
grown up with it and they use it, and more they're even producing it with, you
Right.
know, YouTubes and Facebooks and everything.
And the you know the popularity of Jon Stewart's Daily Show, where he is
Right.
very good at taking you know all kinds of excerpts from the media and skewering you know them.
He gives you a nightly, as does Stephen Colbert, if you know how
Right.
to interpret him, they
Right.
give nightly lessons in critical media literacy,
Yeah.
where particularly Jon Stewart just takes apart the news, you know, showing clips of events and then showing how the different networks are constructing
That's right.
different views, as are the political parties and politicians.
Yeah, I think it's really, really good that there are some promising sort of ways into this topic that you don't have to feel like completely helpless, that this is all part of a big, you know, conspiracy or something, that the tools to kind of free us, to liberate us, are pretty near at hand. But
Well, the
what we have,
material is out there,
yeah.
but we need to give them the tools, which is the critical media literacy, which involves just what we talked about, understanding the different sources of information, the different corporations and networks, understanding the biases of specific ones, understanding journalistic ethics and which news organizations provide the most solid news, understanding political blogs that give you know, a variety of different points of view. It takes a while to educate students in, you know, the complexities of this system, but it's all out there. It's just a question of beginning to do it.
I want to this is excellent. I want to just conclude this discussion by just talking a little bit about your views on globalization, because I know you've written a little bit about it, and I want to ask you two types of questions. One is, how does globalization play into this media literacy thing? How are they interconnected? And the second issue, you know, I want to sort of see what your views are on the sort of the prevailing view of globalization is the Tom Friedman view, which is, you know, this is a flat world, you know, winners are the ones who are most entrepreneurial, can use these tools, and we have to get going to create you know a highly competitive set of students who can compete globally in the world. That whole narrative. You want to just make some comments on either you know aspect of globalization.
Well, pursuing the topic that we've been talking about the
Yes.
last 30 minutes, I would argue that global literacy is as important as, say, media literacy, political literacies, techno literacies, the other literacies that we've talked about. And that is being able to read global culture, understanding there's a global environment, that events in the Gulf, you know, affect the ecology of entire countries and continents. The volcano in Iceland is a good example of a global world where a volcano in Iceland can affect the transportation networks and economies of places all over the world. So it's understanding how we're globally connected, but it's also being literate about different global cultures, be it Latino culture, African American culture, be it China, Japanese culture. And by the way, I don't take the Tom Friedman view of globalization that it's all good. I see both positives and negatives. So you have things like global environmental crisis, or you might have human rights violations and wars. So global literacies are seeing the bad things that are going on in the world as well, you know, as good things. It's making students able to sympathize with and participate in global social movements, like the peace movement or ecology or feminist, as well as global corporations.
Yeah, that's well said, because I think, you know, again, it's part of, you know, if students are in a global village, they are in a global world, we can't just keep the same narrative. I mean, the narrative
Right.
stood for a long time that sort of America was exceptional and we have our own reality, you know,
Right.
that
And we have our good points. We have
Yes.
Our bad global interventions.
Yes.
You know, I'm talking about CIA interventions, Vietnam War, Iraq for that matter, our neoliberal capitalist exploitations. But we have positive interventions too, in our championing of civil rights, some administrations that attempt to fight poverty. In fact, even the Bush administration kicked in for AIDS medicines in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So it's seeing both the positive and the negative things that the U.S. does in the world, as well as other countries. So in general, in globalization, there's both positives and negatives, and some things that are just contradictory or ambiguous.
Yeah, I mean, one example would be global warming, which is so totally, it's very difficult to piece out how, you know, whether changing light bulbs in the student's house or, you know, driving less miles and walking are going to actually affect, you know, the long-term issues around global warming. But, you know, that's one of the messages that kids get. But there's another message, which is it's all, you know, completely random, and this is all part of the planetary change, and they can't do anything about it. So somewhere between those two realities, right?
Well, I mean, I would argue that there are big systemic problems with global warming that has to do mostly with corporate pollution, as well as our addiction to automobiles, gasoline, oil, etc. But that as an ethical and a pedagogical task, people should try to save energies, et cetera, because everything does have an effect, et cetera.
Right.
But we can't think, you know, delude ourselves that that'll be the solution to a problem of global warming.
Mm-hmm. And to what extent, if people are media literate, they could actually understand some of the issues around and go deeper into some of the underlying issues, which are to do with, you know, our addiction to consumption and our, you know, a
Right.
certain type of economy, which is based on higher and higher levels of consumption. We can't easily take ourselves off from that sort of treadmill to say, okay, we're going to go into a no-growth society,
Right.
which is, in fact, you know, much healthier for the planet and probably for us in the long term. But
well, again, these are great issues
yeah.
for students to discuss, and they can find all kinds of information and different points of view out there on the internet and in the media. And it's exciting to open up these debates to them and have them go after this information and, you know, begin to educate themselves and discuss these things.
All right, so this is, we're winding down here. This is
okay.
a great discussion. I really appreciate this. Are there a couple of few books that come to mind or a few websites that you would point people to if they want to extend or develop this discussion? Surely we'll put up on my, you know, my blog and my website some references to some of your materials and so on. But are there some other people, authors, things that you think people must read in order to get a real good grounding in some of these issues?
Well, on my website, I have a lot of media literacy resources. There's a Santa Monica Center for Media Literacy that has quite a bit. Jeff Scherer is putting up on his UCLA website a lot of resources. Canada, there's media literacy groups, Australia, all over the world. So I'm not sure there's any one
Okay.
that I, or even two or three that
No.
I would say, hey, these are the best media literacy sites. Probably just having students explore on their own, different countries, different sites, different sources of information.
Doug, I really appreciate this. This is a great sort of, opening to, a whole field that I think, is going to be so important if we're going to make progress in many, many areas. And it's, what I think I'm concluding from this conversation is that we're very far behind in
Yes.
terms of owning up to the role media literacy plays if we're going to form a more educated, more aware 21st century citizen, if not a student. We've got to be able to engage. And I think part of the thing is engaging with this media is sort of fraught with, issues that sort of obviously, are to do with the fact that, it's so new and we're not sure where it goes. And part of it, you've touched on this, that the students are way ahead in many areas than the teachers. So we have
Right.
to try to, be a little bit more courageous and less risk averse when we kind of go into these. But what you've pointed to are some fascinating, if you really do, jump in here, there are so many great ways in which students can get engaged and really get so much out of the topic that it's just incredible. So I want to thank you for that. I want to see if we can stay in touch, and I'll be able to send you the link to the podcast and everything else. And we'll, but this is a great start to this podcast series. It's all I imagined. You really opened the discussion, and it made it very, very interesting.
Well,
So,
excellent, Lawrence. I
thanks.
enjoyed the conversation with you. I think we sketched out some real challenges for reconstruction of education. We indicated how far the U.S. has to go in media literacy, in all kinds of literacies like global literacy, but that some people have started to do it, and we just have to take up the challenge and further the cause.
Great.
So good to talk to you, and
Same
I'll look
here.
forward to getting your podcast and putting it on my website as well.
Oh, great. Oh, Doug, great. I appreciate it. So have a very good afternoon and evening, and I'll love to stay in touch with you.
Okay, excellent. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.